Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's April 14th, 16 degrees here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin, good morning.
Good morning. So here is the deal. It's springtime, right? It's certainly not going to feel like it. So one of the bigger concerns that I have, at least the next couple of nights, would be those wind chill valleys, those feels-like temperatures. So even though tonight we're expecting lows in the 20s, it's going to feel like in the low teens. So be mindful of that. We're going to top out in the low 40s for today, mostly sunny skies. Showers start to redevelop overnight tonight into early tomorrow. And then again, Wednesday into Thursday. Now, we're not expecting a lot of accumulation at all. But my concern, of course, would be slick spots, maybe some black ice out there because temperatures are going to be so cold below the freezing mark. And it looks like we start to warm up just in time for the weekend. A couple of extra clouds developing Sunday into Monday. Otherwise, the big story for this week is that cold snap. And finally, when will we see spring? It looks like it's going to take a couple of, you know, maybe about another 2 weeks or so, and it'll be a lot better. But in the meantime, bundle up.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. And with a look at the backcountry on the phone with us, Mark from Utah Avalanche Forecast Center. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Lily. Today, conditions are generally safe and the avalanche danger is low. There's still a few ways to get hurt in the upper Cottonwood Canyons. Just enough snow fell yesterday with strong northwest winds to create a few soft slabs of snow that could be triggered. Also in these areas with that new snow, today's strong sunshine could warm the top few inches of that new snow enough to cause shallow wet avalanches sliding on the hard ice crust underneath. And it's not an avalanche hazard necessarily, but that hard ice crust creates slide for life conditions, meaning if you're in steep terrain and you fell, you would be unable to self-arrest and stop. So definitely something to be watching out for.
Okay, so as director, you're closing up shop then as of Sunday?
We're wrapping it up Sunday with our regular daily forecast. We will put out updates through the rest of April with anytime we get snow, and then we'll continue publishing observations. So anyone getting out can submit an observation. We'll keep publishing those, and we can all let each other know what we're seeing.
Okay. I don't know if I'll talk to you again, but again, thank you and your staff for a great season of reporting. We appreciate it.
Thank you as well, Leslie. Good day.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Later on, Park City High School English language learner teacher Millie Moffitt has details about her new website, parkcityrocks.org, a community building and social distancing activity for students in the school district. And then Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Shelley Barris with details about a financial 411, a free webinar happening later this week. Stay tuned. KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council will meet electronically via Zoom tomorrow. You can check the county's website for other ways to join in on the meeting. The work session starts at 3:30. On the phone with a preview, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see, you'll have first a presentation from Deputy County Attorney Jamie Bracken on federal coronavirus legislation. She'll be talking about three major bills. Can you kind of give us a nutshell description here?
Sure can. You know, the $2.2 billion federal CARES Act, C-A-R-E-S, actually is contained within three bills that were passed by the by Congress. Yeah, it really divides it up into three categories, kind of coronavirus preparedness, what they're calling the family first bill, and then aid and economic recovery. And it covers a whole range of things from unemployment enhancement and emergency paid medical leave, which is one of the items that applies to local government pretty strongly. It has aid to public health agencies, aid to transit, child care for essential workforce, enhanced CDBG grant availability, and then overall recovery assistance for the disaster and the local emergencies. So, you know, it's imperative that local governments like ourselves really take a look at this. Although a lot of this will be governed and come down through states and block grants, we still need to understand it to see how it might affect our budgets in the future.
So is it something that the county actually has to go and apply for?
Well, that's to be seen at this point. I mean, for instance, with disaster recovery, we already know that we're going to have to apply to FEMA for reimbursement that's allowed under those emergency declarations. And of course, we've declared an emergency. The state's declared an emergency that's been approved by the president. So we will be eligible for those types of things. But for instance, CDBG enhancements, that will come down through the state and then likely through our regional associations. For us, it's the Mountain Lands Association of Governments. And then anything direct to, or that's supposed to be directed to local governments, if you're of a population of 500,000 or greater, you get direct block grants from the federal government. Otherwise, it comes through the state. And I believe that the legislature will start talking about that in their legislative session coming up this week. But they have until October to distribute that money, so we're not really sure yet.
All right. Any idea? I mean, do we have any idea what kind of money we're talking about for Summit County?
We really don't yet. I think until the state deals with that and decides how they're going to distribute that, we're not going to know.
All right. The Family First Coronavirus Response Act has funding for testing, food assistance, unemployment aid. It also extends sick leave and family medical leave. And the agenda item applies this to the Snyderville Basin Recreation District. Does it apply to other county staff as well, Mountain Regional or any?
It can and does. They just have to adopt the regulations. I was able to do that this week by executive order, and I've done so. So it already applies to the county staff. I believe Mountain Regional, since they've declared an emergency as well, can do that directly without going to the county council. And it's just that Basin Rec did not declare an emergency, and so they have to do that through the county council.
Okay. All right. Let's see. You also tell me that you have a couple of planning efforts related to community recovery. Is that in addition to this?
Yes, very much so, and very specific to our community. I mean, we've been working ourselves, the Chamber of Commerce, and Park City, and all of our communities have gathered together a team of local leadership to put together a plan that's loosely titled right now, Together or Together Unidas Summit County, which really is a framework or a blueprint for our community recovery. It very much mirrors the structure of the governor's Lead Together plan. It has three phases of urgent stabilization recovery. We wanted to make sure to mirror that language so it matched what the state was talking about. Very public health driven as far as timelines and data that will support how we move from one phase to another. But specific to Summit County, we really want to focus on four areas. The healthcare system and public health, our social systems and the people that are affected by the emergency, our economy, and then one area that the governor's plan didn't talk about as much is certainly local government, because that's important to us. So we gathered together folks like Becky Kearns and Rob Sargent, Miles Rademan, Katie Wright, Dr. Hanrahan, Dr. Province from the hospital, Roger Armstrong and Max Doyle to help us think through kind of this framework for how we're going to step through the different phases of this recovery for Summit County specifically.
So when does it go into effect? I mean, is it once things get lifted, or
we're gonna daylight it to the community over the next few days? We're already working under it because we are in the urgent phase already and are already working on some very specific things to start to move us to the next phase. You know, we have to be working on the stabilization phase while we're in the urgent phase. Otherwise, it sneaks up on us and catches everybody by surprise. And for instance, through the Emergency Operations Center right now, we're working on what does the next set of public health order or orders look like in regards to getting industries back to work. We're putting together the framework right now of how to approach different industry groups in our community and have them help us put together plans that will meet the next set of public health goals or what we anticipate those to be moving into the next phase. The whole idea of that is to start to get our community thinking about this next phase before we even get there so that we can, you know, as I describe it, kind of get to the 75% solution of what that will be. And then once we implement that, we can make adjustments to it based on what's happening at that time.
So you mentioned the three phases. We're in the urgent phase. The second one is stabilization. What's the third phase?
The third phase is recovery. And okay, that's probably the hardest one to define right now because we from a public health standpoint, we really don't know when we're going to get there. I mean, I've heard the public health system talk about, recovery being kind of when we can guarantee that our communities won't get any more surges of contraction of the virus again, or that our healthcare system is safe from surges. And that seems like right now, like it's pretty far way off, but that's probably fairly realistic given what information we're getting right now.
So these public health orders, when do you expect to see new ones issued? Closer to May 1st?
Well, our current orders end on May 1st. Those could get extended in their current form, but it's all going to be driven by the public health data and what both the state and our local folks feel is the best thing for our community. So from the standpoint of getting these plans in place for each industry and how they can operate in the next phase, it's probably more important to concentrate on that at this point than what the trigger is. The public health system will give us the trigger, and I think that will be somewhere in that May to June timeframe. But we want to be ready as soon as that trigger gets hit.
Sure. And what's the thinking at this point in terms of what's okay to open? We saw, of course, landscaping now becoming an essential service. But what are some of those others out there that people, that the experts are talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think our goal is to open up as much as we possibly can. And that is going to be driven by what we feel different industries can do within not allowing more spread. One of the biggest things that's probably tough within our community, obviously we're dependent on visitors and visitors from all over the world. So what does it mean to our special events and what are we going to be allowed to do in public gatherings? Right now we're hearing very, very clearly that gathering, we're probably going to step back into being allowed to do public gathering. And I don't exactly know yet what that means as far as time, but let's say that we go back to in the first few months where only 10 groups of 10 can publicly gather. Well, that has a big effect on how a lot of things operate in our community that drive our economy. And then if we step to the next step of going back to, say, 50 in a public gathering, that still limits us quite a bit. So we have to be thinking through that and understand what would trigger some of those steps so that we can give some certainty to the community, because we really want to try and prevent having a lot of plans and excitement around getting back to, quote-unquote, normal business. If that's not going to be exactly possible.
All right. Back to the agenda, a discussion and possible approval of some property tax exemption for 501c3s. At the last discussion, there was a legal dispute between Scott Loomis of Mountainlands Housing Trust and your assessor's department. What's this about?
Well, this is the same thing. I think the council wanted a little bit more information from the assessor and from our auditor's office on what exactly they were suggesting and recommending. It looks like, reading through the staff report, that the assessor's office and the auditor's office have done a little research with the state tax commission and are bringing back this information to the council for consideration.
Okay. At 4:45, a budget resolution to reduce expenditures due to COVID-19. In the staff packet, we don't see details of what reductions you're making. Can you tell us?
It's really no different than what was presented last week. It will have a little bit more detail, and Matt is still putting together that staff report. Given, you know, when you only have a week in between, sometimes that makes it a little challenging to get it in there. But the general categories to get to that $2.9 to $3 million expenditure reduction are the same as it was last week, as recommended by council. So that detail will be added to the packet today.
Have you had any reactions from staff about changes you're considering that would affect their merit pay or 401ks?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, probably the hardest part is something that already has been implemented, and then you're having to reduce that. The 401k has gotten less reaction just because we had not implemented that yet. So, you know, the equity of having some employees that have already received the merit increase based on their anniversary date in the year and their review during that time. It does present an equity issue within the workforce. But, you know, I think unusual times call for unusual measures, I'm not sure what would be more unusual than what we're dealing with today.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add about the agenda?
No, it's just I think we've got a lot of interesting topics on today. One thing that I do want to mention is, you know, our census response rate is still not at the level that we'd want it to be. Leading our community is Francis at about 55%, a little bit above 55%, and trailing our community is Park City at about 15.6% as of this morning. So we need to do a lot more work with our community on getting out and responding to the census.
So are these percentages, though, skewed just given that we have such a transient community?
Well, I mean, I think they could be. I think one of the issues in Park City certainly is the P.O. box issue, as opposed to, mail going directly to homes. It probably is also just an issue of the times that we're in, where we're all gathering information in different ways right now, and maybe the traditional sources that we're using to get the word out about the census and how our federal government is doing that is not hitting exactly the right way. So I think we just have to be more creative about helping people understand the why behind why to do the census.
How much money are we talking about on the line here? I mean, if the numbers don't come in as expected, we don't get as much as we had hoped, right?
That's exactly right. And I'm not sure on magnitude, but you have to remember it's over a 10-year period. So everything from transit money to CDBG sources and other types of social service type grant programs are and our health department are dependent on these funds. So it's very important that way. Plus the whole issue of congressional representation in our state, that is always a big issue. And if we're better representing ourselves, hopefully we get better represented over that 10-year period.
Okay. Hey, Tom, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, you're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 826.
In response to the increase in COVID-19 cases, the Intermountain Heber Valley Instacare is offering on-site curbside COVID-19 testing for Wasatch County residents. If you meet criteria, you'll be tested for COVID-19. A physician's order is not required and is available to everyone. To find out if you need testing, call the COVID-19 hotline at 844-442-5224 or use the new Symptom Tracker app at intermountainhealthcare.org. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization supporting KPCW.
Well, last night, the Wasatch County Health Department announced the extension of their stay-at-home order. KPCW's David Boyle has more.
Wasatch County Health Department Director Randall Prope says after consideration and meeting with community leaders, they announced that the stay-at-home order, originally given on April 1st, will be extended through May 1st. The order requires that all non-essential businesses and operations cease. The order also asks residents to only leave their homes for limited activities while applying social distancing. Prope said this week they'll be working to prepare to help businesses be ready to open up more widely by the end of the month.
We'll be meeting with our local businesses and helping them identify what it's going to take for the next few months to continue to operate in as safe a way as we can, including helping them know what they're going to need in terms of protective equipment and cleaning supplies and steps that might need to be taken in order to be able to function. So over the next week, our goal is to meet and identify those things and give them time to get those materials and things in hand, and hopefully they'll be available as we move forward. Right now, they have not been available. They've been pretty well used by all of our essential services, including our healthcare system, but more of them coming available.
Probst added they are appreciative of the feedback they've received.
And the number of businesses that have been willing to call and say, look, we're not excited about this. We support what's happening, and if we need to go till May 1st, we're willing to do that. They are looking for some help in figuring out how they're going to get back to business, and so are we. We're anxious to make that happen.
The extended order will be posted on the county coronavirus page in the coming days. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
Coming up now on 8:30, good morning. Well, as we've reported, the Park City Education Foundation is offering teachers access to its Express Grant Fund. This is an opportunity for a quick grant turnaround with money coming to teacher within days. One of the teachers who received funding is Park City High School English Language Learner teacher Melanie Moffitt. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. So tell us about the grant that you applied for.
Well, we're really excited, and I do want to thank the Park City Education Foundation. They have given two grants to myself for express grants, and they've been very helpful in this time of need. This grant is Park City Rock. We're really excited. It's for five teachers and district people came together, Anna Williams, Deb Guthrie, Dana Mulick, and Jose Jr. Vieta, to come up with an idea to get kids outside but safely socially distancing. And a lot of our parents are afraid to allow their kids to go outside because of the spread of the virus, and we wanted to provide them a way to get out safely with this program.
Okay, so what does the program do?
Okay, this is what's awesome. So what we did was we have the Latino in Action kids from Park City High School. They're helping us with the outreach for it, and the kids will paint a rock. And they can be as creative as they want, and then they upload it to pcrocks.org. And we want positive messages, beautiful pictures, and they upload it to the website. They can also take a picture of their rock and have a friend try to find it with hints. And then each week, we're going to pick a rock of the week. And the rock of the week, this is the Latino in Action kids are going to help us. And we're going to look for positive messages, creativity, and that weekly winner can win a prize.
Okay. So this is all ages, yeah?
All ages. We will have age categories. So when you go on parkcityrocks.org, and I want to emphasize .org, you upload your picture and it asks for your age.
Okay.
And then each week we will pick a winner of the rock. And then as we go along, we're going to have challenges where kids have to take pictures of rocks that they have seen, and certain rocks, if they find the whole code, they will also get a prize.
So how much was your grant for?
It was for $600. So for $600, our goal is to get kids outside socially distancing. We have the rules online in Spanish and English, and we're encouraging people to take hikes with their families only and take pictures of the rocks and not to touch the rock or pick up the rock. And we thought this would be a great way for kids to get outside.
Sure. And then the money was spent basically just for the prizes then, huh?
No, actually, we made art kits for some of our population that might not have these supplies at home. So they were for the paint brushes, the Latino in Action children, Deb Guthrie, Dana Mulek, Anna and I, and Jose Vieta have been delivering them to certain locations for kids to be able to have access to the art material.
Okay. And who put the website together? That was quick.
that was my daughter and her friend.
Okay.
It's nice to have a tech-savvy child in your house.
Yeah. And it's both in English and Spanish, then, the directions? And
yes. The Latino and Action kids have been amazing with outreach. I have to do a shout-out to them. All of the Spanish interpretation was done by the Latino and Action students. Our outreach people are really busy translating, and I sent that out, and the kids got it back to me within, I would say, 20 minutes.
Oh. And this was just rolled out, I think, what, Friday or something? I mean, can you talk to us a little bit about what kind of response have you seen? Or?
Oh, it's been amazing. We've already had kids upload. We want, today is the official day to upload your rocks to the site. We do have a one-day grace period because we are screening rocks. You know, we have a lot of junior high kids out there. So we're screening rocks. And so it takes a day for your rock to hit the gallery. So right now we're screening our first submissions, and it's been amazing.
All right. So give me an idea. Where are some of these rocks being put? Just along walking paths that we use anyway?
Yes. So we, great question. We have them along sidewalks. We have had them by creeks. We've had them on bridges, hiking trails, the schools. So we want kids to be creative, but they need to be seen so people can take a picture of them. But do not pick up the rocks.
Okay. Again, it's parkcityrocks.org. A Hard Rock Miner is the page's mascot.
Yes, that is Manny the Miner. And Manny the Miner has been driving through the neighborhood, encouraging kids to paint their rocks. And actually, Manny picks the rock of the week.
Okay. All right. Melanie, talk to us a little bit about how your teaching experience is going during COVID-19. I mean, I'm not really sure how you were. You as something that you had students every day come to class, or were you more of a resource teacher as a English language learner?
You know, that's a great question. It has been challenging, and I just can't say how my staff, how the people that work with me are amazing. The teachers are amazing. I could not do it without them, but it has been very challenging, and this is kind of where this idea came from, because we do Google Meet with kids, and as I'm doing Google Meet with high schoolers, I'm watching their siblings crawl all over, you know, crawl over, wave. I've met everybody's dog. And siblings through this. And I realized that these kids need social. They need to be social, and it's been difficult, but the kids are responding to the lessons, and we go on Google Meet. And my job is basically to reteach and provide equality for kids. And my parapros have been amazing too. So we have specific meet times to get online.
Okay, kids who may need a bit of assistance due to maybe the language barrier. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So what we generally do is close that gap by providing language acquisition, vocabulary, understanding for students. And it's just not in Spanish. It's in many languages. And we have the student, what I normally do is work with the students in small groups to provide them scaffolding to help them understand the main ideas. And they rise to the occasion. It's amazing. We have kids that are now taking AP classes, and we help them with the vocabulary for the AP classes. through Dream Big, and the cohort is really amazing.
Yeah. Are teachers kind of keep into a typical school day, 7:30 to 2:30, or is it kind of all over the place now?
It's kind of, we do have scheduled meet times where the kids can go on, and we try to keep it to red day, white day, the traditional schedule. But for my students, a lot of them have had to go to work. If their parents have lost their job, they're working. So what I've been doing, and some of my colleagues, I know Eric James is doing this, is we are being very flexible with our time. So like last night, a kid didn't get off work till 5 o'clock. So I Google met with them till 5 o'clock. We're just trying to be as flexible as we can with our students. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Again, parkcityrocks.org, something fun and to get outdoors to do. Anything else you want to tell us about it, Melanie?
No, I just want everybody to be outside, positive messaging, and just thank the Park City Education Foundation and the Latinos in Action Kids for helping me with this vision.
And I know it did. The money did come from Park City High School, but it sounds like it's something that could be done anywhere in the country.
It's actually for elementary kids.
Okay.
And junior high kids. But I wrote the grant with Deb Guthrie, Anna Williams, and Dana Mulek. And Dana Mulek and Deb Guthrie are elementary teachers.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks for your time, Melanie.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Park City High School teacher Melanie Moffitt. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:39. Well, coming up on today's This Green Earth, a rebroadcast of an interview with Jordan Rutter of the American Bird Conservancy. Jordan sharing their recent study published in the journal Science showing that there's been a massive decline in bird populations in North America and highlights the very simple actions that can be taken to make a real difference. Again, that coming up on today's edition of This Green Earth right after the Local News Hour and NPR News at 9:06. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is hosting a free financial 411 webinar this week. On the phone with details, I have the executive director of the local Habitat chapter, Shelley Barris. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us, what is this webinar about?
Yeah, absolutely. So our education team was preparing to transition our education classes to be virtual during this time. And we were kind of chatting about it and thought it might be really helpful to share just some tips to help navigate these uncertain times from kind of a financial perspective. So if people maybe have been laid off or their hours have been reduced and they're waiting for unemployment to come in, you sort of have this gap time. And we just wanted to share some ideas that we came up with as a financial education group to kind of help maybe help people through that, maybe just give them some information and answer some questions if we could help people.
Okay, so when is it happening?
So it's going to be this Thursday, April 16th, from 6 to 7, and it is a Zoom webinar, as most things are this day. And they can go to our Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties Facebook page, and it's a Facebook event, and that's how you'll register and get the link to join us on Thursday.
Okay. And who do you have there then answering people's questions, or is it really just a presentation? Is there more of a Q&A?
Yeah, so we are allowing people can put their questions in the Facebook event ahead of time so we can kind of know to answer them. We will have somebody moderating the webinar and checking questions people can ask them along the way. And then we'll also follow up with people afterwards if they want to leave like their email or some contact information with us. But we're working with our same team that helps teach our financial education classes. So we've got some bankers on our team, some Kathleen Barlow, who works in the investment world. And so we've just all been listening to all of this stuff that we're hearing now during this time of what is available and what people might be able to utilize. And we just thought sometimes it's helpful to share that. People are just feeling a little disconcerted in this time.
Sure. So anybody is welcome to join in. It's not just for those who may be hoping to purchase one of the Habitat homes under construction.
Oh, yeah. This is just really for the community. We just thought it's a way to maybe reach out and help people. You know, there are just a lot of things people may not know. that you can do and how to reach out to your bank or other creditors. And we just wanted to try to help give some guidance through this time. And, you know, I think it's a really important time to pay attention to your finances. It can very easily get off track, especially during something like this. And then we do have our regular spring financial education workshop that will be starting Wednesday, April 29th. And that is typically a class for women, but this session we've decided to open it up to everyone so that maybe people hear some things on this Thursday webinar they may be interested in. Let's pay a little more attention to our budget or savings or some other kind of financial information that might help them come through from a situation like this a little bit better off.
Okay, so this runs for what, 5 weeks, once a week? Is that how it works?
Yep, 5 weeks every Wednesday night, and that is from 6 to 8, a two-hour class. It's our first time of doing it virtually, but we've been practicing and getting that all set up, and we would love to have a big group join us this time.
And what would somebody get out of, you know, I mean, we're talking about 10 hours. I mean, what would they learn?
Yeah, we really go through in a lot of detail. We talk about budgeting and we work, with a group about it, and people get to learn a lot just from hearing other people's information. But our instructors will also work one-on-one with people if they have questions or want to work on things. So we start with budgeting. We move through really about savings and savings tools and how to do that. We end up talking about retirement and investments. We talk about how the work you're doing now can help you plan for future kinds of things. We talk about credit. We have a whole class on credit and, you know, what to do with that, how to create good credit, how to maybe work on some credit mishaps. And then we do a session on kind of mortgages as well. So as you're thinking about preparing to purchase a home or what you need to be doing ahead of time to be ready for that.
Okay. Is there a cost to that?
No, all of these are free and presented through Habitat's education program.
Okay. Real quick, what's the status of the homes that you have under construction?
Yeah, well, we are so fortunate that, construction is an essential service, and we are continuing building on those two homes and moving along with that in a way that we can. We can't have volunteers on site, which is really sad for us, but we're very happy to be able to continue the construction on those and are really hopeful that by end of summer they'll be complete.
Okay, and how many are we talking about?
So this year we're building two single-family homes while we're working on our subdivision approval for some townhomes. So we have 24 townhomes that we're just in that kind of beginning planning phase and hope to be starting one of those buildings by next fall, late next fall or early next year.
All right. And in terms of the single family homes, have they been spoken for or will there be an application for those?
Yes, we have. We held our application process at the end of the year, the first part of this year, and we have selected those two homeowners.
Okay. So people should just kind of wait for the next batch with the 24 townhomes eventually.
Right. We actually kind of planned on this spring opening that up, but it looks like we'll be holding off for a little bit. But go to our website. You can sign up on our website and the information form that gets you on our contact list. So when that does open, we can let you know. Or as always, for all of these things, you can reach out by email to our education person, and her name is Brianna. So Brianna@habitat-utah.org. We'd love to get people on that contact list so they know when we're open and can participate.
Okay. And in terms of the restore, again, everything on hold in terms of donations at this point?
Yes, the restore is closed, and we're so sad to not be able to see our customers and our donors, and we're not able to take donations, but we're just asking people to hold on to them, put a little corner in your garage, and as soon as we're able, we'll be delighted to get out and help people with those donations.
Okay, and is that tough for you? Because, I mean, I know that was a source of income.
Right, it is really tough. We're kind of trying to react like all other businesses in the community about that and trying to just know what we can do and be prepared for a time when we can be open up again and be safe and take care of our staff and our community.
Yeah. And any thoughts about how you would take donations? Because everyone's been cleaning out their closets.
Yeah, we've actually really been looking at that and trying to kind of put together a plan from some models of other similar types of outlets like ours. So we're really, our staff is working on that. It's tough because it's really hard to know the reality about how you sanitize things. But we're definitely doing some research and hopeful that we can do that. Really our goal to keep all those great items able to be reused and keep them out of the landfill. So our staff is working on that kind of a plan right now.
Yeah, I can understand the sanitizer. I'm just thinking of the onslaught, though. I mean, in terms of,
right?
I mean, right. You can't have it all come at once. There's just no way, there's no room for one thing.
Right, for sure. So we're just trying to kind of take that all under consideration and figure out what other kinds of options we might have to be able to, you know, possibly take care of some of that along the way.
Okay. Again, people can get more. It's habitat-utah.org. Anything else you wanted to mention, Shelley?
Yep. Nope. And then if they're interested in this class on Thursday, check our Facebook page out. There's an event there, and you can sign up there and get the link for the class. So thank you. Thanks for your time. I'm glad to share this with everyone out there.
All right. Thank you, too, Shelley. Shelley Barris is the Executive Director of the Summit Wasatch County Habitat for Humanity. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the head of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation says that the COVID-19 lockdown has left them with an uncertain budget year and a serious dent in their expected summer revenues. Colin Hilton says he supports the county health department, though, when it ordered the lockdown in March, and he will support the county on whatever decision they make about reopening. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
Hilton told KPCW that the Utah Olympic Park was closed on March 13th. There are other venues, Soldier Hollow in Wasatch County and the Olympic Skating Oval at Kearns, were closed on March 16th. Hilton said the Olympic Park is now operating with just essential staff, no more than 3 people at a time, maintaining the buildings and the grounds. But he said he has not furloughed any employees. He said they've been able to get help from a loan approved by the Small Business Administration and the Paycheck Protection Plan, or PPP.
My staff was absolutely terrific in getting on top of that, and not only have we submitted our application, but we've actually received the funding back to us already.
Okay, well, that was quick then, huh?
It was. The process was, as most of the other nonprofits around town know, it was very challenging, but once the lending institutions were able to get the required information that they would be asked by the SBA, it finally kicked in about Tuesday of last week.
Under the PPP, the loan can be converted to a grant, and Hilton is hopeful they can do that. He said he's optimistic for the summer, but they're waiting on word from the health department. He has told his staff not to plan for any activities until at least June, and even those could be limited. Hilton said his budget year starts in May.
I got to say, it's one of the strangest budget seasons, trying to forecast revenues and expenses in a time frame when there's so much uncertainty. So we're making appropriate, prudent adjustments in those budgets. But at this point, we've developed so much good in what we've been looking to do with our Olympic Legacy story. While we'll make cuts, we're not going to veer off of our long-term goals and strategies.
The Olympic Park normally gets a lot of summer visitors, but Hilton envisions that the revenue this season will drop by over $2 million. He said that's over a 50% drop in his expectations. The Olympic Foundation's investment in the stock market is also taking a hit.
Our investment portfolio has dropped somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 to $8 million in value, from about $53 million down to $46 million. And, you know, our projected earnings off of the lower amount certainly will not allow for our normal, typical year of activity levels.
While they will make some adjustments in their operational spending, Hilton doesn't foresee any capital projects being cut since those are supported by state funding. For the future, he said they will stay focused on their strategic goals, primarily being ready to host a Winter Olympics in 2030 or 2034.
You know, we need to get our facilities up and ready for Olympic standards. We set a goal of by 2027 to be Olympic ready. We also had a goal to double the number of our winter sport participants by 2030. One of the most telling strategies we put out there was to balance the need to be financially viable in perpetuity while promoting and prioritizing our mission.
Colin Hilton, president of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broff.
Last week, Utah approved half of the 1,000 applications they received for small business loans. KPCW's David Boyle has more about that.
Utah's Small Business Bridge Loan Program is targeted to businesses with fewer than 50 employees and awards 0% interest loans for 5 years, with the first payment due 1 year after the loan is received. The loans range from $5,000 to $20,000, but are no more than 3 months' operating expenses. 1,000 businesses submitted their applications in time for the first round of funding. In all, $6.1 million were awarded to 502 businesses. Executive Director of the Governor's Office of Economic Development, Val Hale, explains the criteria for how they determined who received the first round of funding.
The number of employees, whether there are multiplier effects to their businesses, the impact that they have in their community. We had a team of about 25. Each of the awardees was reviewed about 5 times through the process, awarded a score. The evaluators are people from the private sector, from the banking industry, from GOED, and from other state agencies. We've had a really good team.
Round two for funding opened Monday and will close Thursday at noon. Hale said those who did not receive funding in the first round will have their application automatically resubmitted in the second round.
It's difficult when you have as many people who have applied for the limited funds that we have. That person, his or her business, will be resubmitted to the second round of funding and may still get funded. We just simply don't have sufficient funding to fund all of the businesses, and I wish that there were opportunities to do that, but it's just the way it is.
Nonprofits can also apply for funding this round. $5.9 million in funding will be made available, with Workers' Compensation Fund providing $1 million and the state providing the rest. Links to the application can be found on kpcw.org. Hale says the governor's approach has been that public health and economic welfare should not be considered mutually exclusive from each other.
We've had success in both areas. This has been an extremely trying time for many in our business community, and we hope that by getting the health part of it taken care of as well, we can come out more quickly than we would have otherwise.
Utah Department of Health epidemiologist Dr. Angela Dunn said they are working with the governor's office to determine specific measures to track in order to know when to open up the economy safely.
Things we're looking at include the rate of cases. We want to see a steady decline in our growth rate. We also want to maintain our capacity to be able to test anybody who needs testing, but also continue contact tracing, isolating and quarantining individuals who need to have that happen as well. All of those factors will be considered when we're looking at policies to reopen pieces of our economy.
Dunn says the growth rate for the virus has been declining over the past few days, but because of the 2-week incubation period of the virus, 2 weeks in order to make any assumptions. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
Support for KPCW comes from Esko Heating, AC, Plumbing, and Electrical. Now is a good time to get your air conditioning unit tuned up and ready for summer. More information at 855-ESCO-NOW or escoutah.com. That's ESCO, Esko.
Well, the Summit County Sheriff's Department finding ways to provide community-centric policing during a time when many residents are feeling isolated and distant from friends and neighbors. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has this story about one project to help residents feel connected.
Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez throws credit to his Lieutenant Andrew Wright for suggesting the Happy Birthday Drive-By program. Wright discovered it while looking at different outreach efforts from other sheriff's departments around the state. Martinez says whenever you ask a child how old they are, they know down to the month and day. And he says a birthday is an important milestone for children.
So what we've done is we've asked them to send us a Facebook message or call the number, and we will go out to their house. And what we've been doing is we've been getting about 2 deputies, sometimes on a motorcycle, if we have motorcycles available. We got some balloons for them. We got a little hostess cupcake and just some stickers and badges and a big whiteboard with their name on it. It says Happy Birthday. And we give them a time that we're going to show up. And we really try to make a big deal. We turn on all of our lights, all of our sirens, and get on the PA and wish this person a happy birthday.
As of last week, Sheriff Martinez says they had about 50 bookings and they've been able to do about 5 happy birthday drive-by visits a day.
And the funny thing is, Carolyn, what it actually done is it's not just for the kids. We've had a lot of adults that have wanted this, I guess you would say service, this for us to come out and wish them a happy birthday. So it's ranged the gamut from very young to very mature, and it's been wildly successful.
Martinez says it's a great opportunity to connect with the community in a positive way.
It puts them in the neighborhood to do a patrol. So they're utilizing the opportunity to wish somebody a happy birthday, to really make that a big deal for that person, to make them feel special. And when they go, they just don't go back to patrolling parking lots. They're actually still in the community, letting residents know that we are there, keeping them safe, you know, serving and protecting.
The Sheriff's Department will be able to respond to requests as long as they are not engaged in urgent law enforcement. You can find the link to the Summit County Sheriff's Department Facebook page on kpcw.org. If interested in scheduling a birthday drive-by, contact Lieutenant Andrew Wright at 435-615-3686. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News. Degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for a pretty nice day. Not quite as cold, or at least the wind's not as cold. Expected high up about 41 under sunshine. A few clouds tonight, 29. We'll see increasing clouds tomorrow with snow showers by tomorrow afternoon. 42 is tomorrow's high. 60% chance of some snow on Thursday, decreasing to a 30% chance of snow on Friday. By Saturday, back to some sunshine and hopefully warmer temperatures. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned now for headline news from NPR, then This Green Earth. It's 9 o'clock.